Okay, so we are on Yud Beis Amud Beis. So three lines down from the top, it says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Sichacha b'chitzin zecharim k'sherim nekevos psula. If a person used for schach arrows, with arrows, b'chitzin, a chitz is an arrow, b'chitzin, with arrows, zecharim, male arrows, k'shera, then that's kosher for schach. But nekevos, with female arrows, psula, that is pasul. What are male and female arrows? So this is electronics. It's just like there are electronics, the plugs. There's male and female. So too when it comes to arrows. Some of you may have seen the picture, but the bottom line is it's a pretty straightforward idea. The idea here is that whenever you have a piece of wood that is in its natural state, so wood is not makabel tumah. Fruit, you know, foods that grow on things, fruit, vegetables, whatnot. So we know that once they become wet and you want them to be wet, they become washed off in one way or another, so then they are now susceptible to tumah. But wood, you can soak it all you want. It's not a food, it has different rules, and so it has to become a kli. Once wood becomes a kli, then it will be makabel tumah. But when it comes to defining a kli, so the rule is, this is not exactly such a rule, but the basic rule is that anything that has a base kibul, you know how to translate that, a base kibul? A receptacle. Yeah. Yeah, an area that's a receptacle. An area that can receive something. I hollowed out area. Once you have something that's a bowl shape, that is a receptacle, they call it a base kibul. So something with a base kibul is a kli, it is makabel tumah. It is susceptible, it will receive, it is susceptible to tumah. But if you have a piece of wood, and like my kids like to do, and only one of them cut himself once, they like to carve out wood, you know, smooth it out, you know. So that, even though you made it into an arrow, that's not enough that it should become a kli, that's makabel tumah. These are referred to as pshute kli eitz. Straight, pshute, like pashut, simple. Pshute, straight, kli eitz, wooden vessels. So pshute kli eitz are not makabel tumah. It has to have a base. Kibul has to have a receptacle. So that's where the distinction lies between male and female arrows. A male arrow means that the arrow head has a piece that juts out, and that piece that juts out, you stick into the wood. And then a female arrow means that the... it's going to be the opposite. It depends on if you want to define the arrow head or if you want to define the arrow. So if you're talking about the arrow, so in the arrow itself, if it's a male arrow, it means that it's just a piece that fits into the arrowhead. That would mean that the arrowhead has a hollowed out area. Anybody here ever shoot an arrow?
Yeah.
So you know how there's like a metal tip. So they have fancy ones over here, but like on the metal tip, it looks like a bullet. And it's a hollowed out metal bullet. That's what it looks like. So the arrow just goes into it. So that would be a male arrow. It just goes into the receptacle that's an arrowhead. It's just like a hollowed out bullet. The hollowed out bullet is metal. It's makabel tumah anyway. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the arrow itself. So if the arrow itself is male, that means that it just fits into the arrowhead. So then that is not makabel tumah, it's a pshute kli eitz. But if you have the piece of wood of the arrow, it would not be the ones that we're familiar with today, but you have the tip of that arrow is hollowed out, and then the arrowhead sticks into that. So that would be a female arrow, because that arrow has a receptacle that is designed for the arrow to fit into, the arrowhead to fit into. Make sense? Picture, you need a picture. What?
The tip of the arrowhead.
There's an arrow. The arrow is the wood. An arrowhead is something else. The arrowhead is something else. We don't care about the arrowhead right now. All we're talking about is if the arrow itself, the wood, just sticks into something else, that's the arrowhead. Or if the tip of the wood has hollowed out area that the arrowhead will be put into. The arrowhead is the metal part. We don't care about that right now.
Right, that part's just attaching to the stake itself.
I will draw you a picture.
Thank you.
What we have today, if we ever shoot an arrow today, so the basic arrow head, it looks basically like a bullet. It's hollowed out, and the arrow itself is just a piece of wood. So it sticks into the arrowhead, fits it.
It's like a broom,
right? What?
It's like a broom stick. The stick of the broom is also like that, where then you
called the zachar.
Right.
The idea of the nekeva is that the tip of the tip of the arrow itself has this base cubel to it. And then what happens is you have some kind of piece at the bottom of that arrowhead that then fits into the arrow. So it's called the nekeva because there's a receptacle.
They're saying
the cables are problematic because of the receptacle in the wood.
Right.
That becomes a base kibul, and now the arrow becomes technically a kli. That's makabel tuma. The chiddush here is that it's going to be filled. The hole, that receptacle is a funny hole. You know, if you have a cereal bowl, most, I know I tell my kids that we want you to finish the cereal. We want the bowl to be empty by the time you're done. But if you're just going to fill it up and it's going to stay filled for the rest of eternity, what kind of receptacle is that? It's a one-time receptacle. You're supposed to be filled. So that's different than your typical base kibble. Usually when we refer to a base kibble or receptacle, we mean because it's going to be available to fill up again and again and again with all kinds of different things. That's what makes it a kli. Here, it's a little unusual. So that's the chiddush. But in any case, so here we go. So I'm going to Marab. Sicha bechitzin zecharim ksheirav. There's their male arrows. It's kasher. But nekev was psula. But if you were masachich with female arrows, it is pasul. It is pasul. It doesn't say you shouldn't do it because wait, how do you? You can't fix the problem. It's schach pasul. It's not tasev lo min osu over here. They said the schach is no good. There's no way to fix it because it's makabel tuma. You're not allowed to be masachich with something that's makabel tuma. Gemara says pshita. That is obvious. You don't need to tell me that. You're not allowed to be mesachek with something that's makabel tuma. Mahu the same. What is there to say? I would have thought nigzer zecharimat in the kevos. They're not allowed to use the male arrows either, because I mean everyone's going to be able to make these distinctions. Everyone knows which arrows you used. It's going to get confusing. People are going to get confused. And what's going to end up happening is people are going to end up using the nekevos as well. So that sounds like a legitimate zera to make. Ka mashmalan that we don't make such a zera. Gemara doesn't explain why, either because people aren't going to confuse it or it's easy enough to distinguish. I'm not sure exactly why we don't make the gzeira, but the Gemara says that is the chiddush of Rav, is that there is no such gzeira. So in case you think that Chazal just make gzeiros on everything, so here's a proof. They don't make gzeiros on everything.
Wait, so to clarify with gzeira, so if they make gzeira, they would be saying...
You're not allowed to use arrows, ever.
You're never allowed to use either one?
That's the suggestion. It's not true. But that's the chiddush of Rav, that you should just know that you are allowed to use arrows for schach, as long as you use the right kind.
Okay, right. Because the gezeira, they basically make a gezeira for the fear that someone would use the wrong one.
It's pretty easy to switch them.
Right.
It sounds like a good gezeira. It sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Don't be mischachek with arrows. You get yourself into trouble. So, for some reason, there's no such gzeira. Okay, so that's the chiddush of you're allowed to use the male arrows for schach. But what's the chiddush in the fact, why do you have to say the nekevos are psula? Obviously, the nekevos are psula. They have a base kibul. Why do you need to say that? Just say, if you're allowed to be masachich with male arrows. Done. Why do you have to say the nekevos no good? That's obvious. The nekevos psula, pshita. That's obvious. Ma, with the same, what's there to say? I would have thought base kibul ha'asui l'malois. A base kibul that is made to be filled, loy shemei kibul, is not called a receptacle. I think that makes a lot of sense, right? A receptacle, a kli, means that the receptacle is made to fill in and take out and fill in and take out, and it's a receptacle. It's not a receptacle if it's just there to pop the thing in. You ever build like one of these bookcases or stuff, like there's a hole and you put the plug in and or the screw or whatever, and you're done. It's just a hole that's there so you know where to get the screw in or where to put in the, what do you call those wooden things? Whatever you call them. So Gemara says, no, kamash malan, that's not the case, at least in this scenario, that is called a base kibul. Again, the Gemara doesn't explain, but at least in this scenario, we call it a base kibul. There's more to talk about. I don't think we want to get into a tangent about Tumah V'Tahara. But there's certainly more to talk about. There's the Tosfos over here. When does it apply? When does it not apply? Do we always say that? Do we not always say that? What is the actual rule? So that requires a little bit more understanding of other things. Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Sichra banitze pishtan psula, buhutzne pishtan kshera, buhushni pishtan eni yoyedeya Mau. If a person used what's called anite pishtan, so that is pasal. What's called hutzne pishtan, that's okay. And then something called hushne, we don't know. So what are all of these things? So the basic gist of all of this is that whenever you're... pishtan is what, by the way? What's pishtan?
Flax.
Yeah, flax. So anybody know what flax is? Nobody knows what flax is. People heard of flax seed, sometimes eat flax seed. But what is flax?
It's like some type of grain.
Yeah, and what does it have to do with shanes?
You can't put that in the world together.
Right, because everyone knows you wear flax. And when you wear flax, and when you have flax underwear on, what's flax? You wear flax... Aflax. What in the world? What is that? Thank you. It's linen. Flax is linen. So, okay, linen we've heard of. So, linen. So, pishtan is the natural state. It's called flax. But what you do with it is you make linen out of it. So, linen is a very natural garment, a type of ingredient, whatever you call it, material that you make into clothing, linen. So, that's why it's tzemeru pishtim. That tzemer is wool, pishtim is linen. So, wool and linen is shanes. So it's very possible for a person to take this naturally growing ingredient called flax, and then eventually it becomes linen. Now we know that if you make a piece of clothing out of linen, you make a blanket, you make something like that, that's makabel tumah. Because anything that's made either to wear or even to sit on is going to be makabel tumah because it becomes clothing. So we know that's no good for schach. But in its natural state, so it should be fine because it hasn't been made into clothing yet. It's very similar to the arrow. Wood has a natural state, and at a certain point, you have to pinpoint, so that wood could become a kli. So same thing here. We're not talking about base kibul. Now we're talking about taking something from its natural state and making it into a kli in a sense. It becomes clothing. So at what stage of the game, that's a good question, right? At what stage in a game do you go from flax to linen? That's problematic because it lends itself to blanket, clothing, whatever. At what stage in the game do you say this is no longer flax and it's a linen garment? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. There's something called anitze pishtan. Rashi says shekein ruuya litame b'negoyim. Once it's in the stage called anitze pishtan, then it could become tame saras. Kedamar b'ma medlikin. Oinetz pishtan. He brings his raya. So at some point, that is going to become enough to be considered a beged. That's a beged is called anitze pishtan, and it's makabeltum. Then there's the opposite, which is it's still such a raw material, it's called hutzne pishtan. What does Rashi say? Shamati Rabbi Yochanan Ksheira, dahainu kishahu behutzin shaloi, moisha gidel. It's still in its natural state, the way that it grows. Well, nishra b'meha mishra, it has not yet even been soaked in water. If you don't know if it's mafteshes, it certainly hasn't been pressed or anything hasn't been done to it to make it easier to then go ahead and process into the next stage. So it's in the very, very first stage. It's basically been harvested and hasn't really been processed very much at all. So then that for sure is natural and you can use it for schach. The shaila is, what about what's called hushni? Any idea? Mahu. Hushni bin adim. I don't know what the din is when it's hushni. But then the Gemara says, okay, hushni atzman in yadeya. I don't even know what hushni itself is. At what stage do we refer to this flax slash linen as hushni? Like, where is even the question? Manavshach. Either way. Idayek ulay nafitz. If Rashi says you press it and you didn't comb it, right? Yeah. You see the Rashi says Shema Diek? Diek here doesn't mean to make a diuk. Diek means Rashi says b'machteshes, that you pressed it. V'olei nafitz b'masreik, and you didn't do what's called nafitz with a comb. That's called hushne. So if you pressed it, but you didn't comb it yet, so hushni kari lai. So then that's called hushni. No crutches. But then you'll suggest that if it was soaked and it wasn't pressed, that's called hutzni. That would be fine. Or maybe If it's soaked and it's not pressed, maybe that's also called hushni. So what do we have? We have a few stages. And the stages are that first, obviously, you have to harvest it. And then you have to do something called pressing it. After you press it, you soak it. After you soak it, you comb out whatever pieces are there. Not, I guess, impurities or whatever. But it means pieces that get there. So dirt and, I don't know, rocks or, I don't know, whatever it happens to get into the stuff, in the natural stuff. So that's the shaila. The shaila is, at what point do you call it original state? At what point do you push it already towards the problematic area? Or at least it's a suffix somewhere in the middle. So the Gemara doesn't really answer it. The Gemara just says it's a suffix. We don't really know. It's really not clear. And the Gemara kind of just stays there without really giving it any clear definition. So bottom line is that if something is really in its natural state, meaning that it hasn't even been, what's the last time? Dilmatari v'leidiyagnami ushni. Or it hasn't even been soaked or pressed or anything. Not soaked or pressed or anything is still fine. Once you enter into the processing part, it gets soaked, it gets pressed, so then everything becomes sketchy. And then once it becomes actually a linen garment, so then for sure it's no good. So if you have this shaila and you want to be masachich with your linen, so you know we'll have to figure it out. You ever have a shaila, Adam? No. Okay, good. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, hani shushi v'shvatzrei masachin behu. So what are these shushi shvatzrei? What are all of these things? So Rashi, what does Rashi say? Plia. It's plia in old French, and shvatzrei is arniza. So Rashi Baruch Hashem doesn't just give us the old French words. He actually explains a little bit. You see it? Three lines up from the bottom. Shushi shvatzrei mini yirokos, some kind of vegetable. The Rebbe Makir Pirish shvatzrei arbishkarin plik whatever hush olav rechavin v'gidol b'yorim. So the shvatzrei apparently has very wide leaves. It grows in the forests. So Rabbi Yehuda says whatever these things are, you can use for schach. And Abaye says, no, not so simple. One of them, yes, one of them, no. What's the difference? What's the issue over here? My time. What's the reason? Why does he say that yes, one yes and one no? Since it smells bad, so a person abandons his sukkah and he goes out. So what's the issue over here? The issue over here seems to be that even though the leaves in themselves are fine, but Abaye felt that one of them was a little bit too stinky. Obviously, if it really stinks and it's rotting and it smells terrible, so that's, I guess, obvious. But here, apparently, it was a delicate enough smell that you have a little bit of a machlokas, if that's enough, that we should say you're not supposed to be masachik with it because of the consequences that people are going to end up not being able to stay in there because it smells too bad. But you do learn halacha from here that anything which does smell bad, you cannot use for your schach. So now the Gemara, we'll just run through this a little bit just to get to the point of the dot towards your Agma. Let's just run through some of this Gemara. The Gemara just goes through different things in terms of schach, but very concrete halachas. Amar Ochanan Bar Rava, right, this is the top of Yud Gimel Amin Aleph. Hani hizme v'hige masachichin b'hu. Hini and hizme, you're allowed to masachich with. Abai Amar b'hizme masachin b'hige loy masachichin. Hizme, yes, higi, no. Why? My time, okay, what's the reason? Okay, when the nasri tarfayu, shavik lovinafik. In this case, it's not a smell, it's the nasri. Nasri is that they fall. Tarfayu, they're leaves, or they're maybe even they're thorny types of things. But the bottom line is that these are either some type of evergreen, maybe, I don't know, it's certainly comparable to that what we would have today. But the idea behind it is any schach that you would use that as it dries out over the first few days and all the things start to fall down. So it's too annoying to be in a sukkah where all of your little pieces of schach are constantly falling down onto your head and into your soup. So then a person's not going to stay in a sukkah like that, so that's no good for schach. So if you would encounter the type of schach that Abai is referring to, where the pieces are falling off all the time and falling onto your table, so then that you should not or cannot be mesachich with. Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Hayafukta de Dikla mesachichin behu, is part of the palm tree you can use for schach. What's the chiddush? Afal gav de agide, even though they are bound. Why? What do you mean it's bound? So what this is referring to is a type of schach that grows in the palm tree, where the leaves, you're cutting it off towards the bottom, where a bunch of different shoots are coming up from the same spot. So what you have in effect is a natural bundle. A natural bundle. Because there's a bunch of different things sticking up, and they're connected. But how are they connected? Naturally. That's how they grow. So the Chiddush of Rav Gidl is, his point, is that you're allowed to use that. Afal gav da'gidei, even though they are bound, eged bidei shamayim leishmei eged. A binding that is natural, that's at the hands of heaven, meaning natural, that's not called a binding, that's not a bundle, that's nothing, that's not a problem at all. Then he adds, afal gav da'hadar agid lehu, and even if a person would then bind them. So here's what you should picture in your mind. At the bottom of this, they are naturally grow together. So you cut it off lower so that they're all still attached. And then it's all spread out, so you want to tie it together at the top. That you did. So, you know, the basic picture would be you have something that's growing and it splits as it grows. But here at the bottom, it's still connected naturally, so you cut it off here at the bottom. So it's spread out as it grows, like a palm tree type of thing, palm leaves. So because it's all spread out, what you did is you tied it tighter at the top so that instead of being all spread out, it stays more tight towards the top. So that you did. So now is that a problem? Now we've entered into the bundle question because you tied it at the top. So Regil says, no. Once they are bound naturally at the bottom, the fact that you go ahead and you then tie them yourself at the top, that's not a problem. Afagav the gidi, it could be shamayim l'shmei eged. If it's natural, it's not an eged. Afagav the hadar, even though you went back, you afterwards, agid lehu, bound it, iged b'chad l'shmei eged. Since you're binding one, that's not called a binding. What do you mean you're binding one? What does he mean by that? You're binding them all together. What do you mean you're binding one? Is this thing on? Yeah, but since they're all bound at the bottom anyway, naturally, they're considered one object. So there's no problem with taking a bunch of leaves and, like, you know, pressing them together, tying them together, because at the end of the day, they're all attached and it's one thing. An eged, as we'll see, a binding, means you're taking multiple objects and tying them together. But if it's one object that's just spread out, so that's not called a binding at all. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Ravina Bar Shila. Chista said, Ravina Bar Shila said, Hane dukre de kane. These dukre reeds, kanim are reeds. Mesachin behu. You can be mesachich with those types of reeds. Afal gav. So what's the chiddush? Afal gav da gide ininu. Even though they are bound, but again, they're bound naturally. Eged bidei shamayim, leishmei eged. Afal gav dehader agid lehu. And even after you go ahead and you tie them at the top, so they stay together. Eged bechad, leishmei eged. Binding one thing tighter is not called a binding. So it's basically the same idea as before. Tanya and Hachi have a brayse that supports this as well. Kanim v'dukranin. Sounds like two different things. Reeds and dukranin. So what are dukranin? Dukranin are like spiky things. They're like, what do you call them? Like the teeth of like a plow. Something like sticks out, something like that. Some kind of plant or a thorn bush or something. So it sounds like both of them. We're talking about two things. That's what the brayse sounds like when you first read it. Reeds and these spiky things. You're allowed to use for schach. So the Gemara says, "Kanim pshita." Reeds, obviously. What do you mean? What's wrong with a reed? It's a naturally growing object. You cut off the ground, you put it on your schach. It's not fruit. It's not a kli. Like, what in the world could possibly be wrong with it? Ema, so you have to say that the chiddush here is, "Kanim shel dukranin." It wasn't two different things, reeds and spiky things. It means the reeds of the dukranin. Mesachim, then you can be mesachich with. So what's the chiddush with that? That's the point, is that the way they grow is that they grow with, like, at the bottom, if you cut them off very low at the bottom, you have a bunch of reeds that grow out from the same spot, and the spot that they grow out from has these little teeth or whatever that come out of it. So you can picture it like a palm tree type of thing, spiky. So it doesn't mean like a thorn bush or anything like that, it just means that those types of reeds that are naturally attached, you're allowed to use for your schach. So the Gemara assumes that's the same idea as we saw a minute ago, that eged bidei shamayim is not an eged, and there's no such thing called making an eged out of something that's spread out, only out of multiple objects. V'rmechizam Ravina bar Shila, hanim arirta de'agma armyotzi de'chavasei v'pesach. This is what we call, in technical terminology, a tangent. The Gemara has something that it does occasionally. What the Gemara occasionally will do is that after we quote someone, sometimes that's like maybe a little unusual to quote from, but when the Gemara will quote a personality, it often will want to quote a personality twice. So it'll just say something else that he said. It could be because there was no better place to put it in Shas, maybe. I don't know. But the Gemara often will quote someone twice. So here, you'll notice that he quoted from Rav Chisda. What was the name? Amar Chisda, Amar Ravina Bar Shila. So Rav Chisda and Ravina Bar Shila. That pattern. Rav Chisda heard from Ravina Bar Shila. So again, Amar Chisda, Amar Ravina Bar Shila. So it quotes exactly the same Masorah to say something that's totally tangential. The Marirta, what does Marirta sound like? Maror. The Maror, the Agma. Swamp Maror. Okay, I don't know what that is. But Swamp Maror. Adam Yotzei Bohani Lechavasai. Person can fulfill his obligation by Pesach, on Pesach with. So the Swamp Maror you could use for Maror on Pesach. Meisive, ask you an attack kasha. Ezoiv. Right back to Ezoiv. We discussed this a little bit in the past. That when it comes to sprinkling the Paraduma, so you have to sprinkle it with an Agudas Ezoiv. A bundle of Ezoiv. We'll have to go back to that with an Aguda, but it's an Aguda of Ezoiv. So what plant? The hyssop. The Ezoiv plant, the hyssop. So what's the problem? So we have a brisa that says Ezoiv v'loy Ezoiv Yavan. You have to use the Azov and not the Greek one, not the Greek Azov, and the Azov Kecholi and not the blue Azov, the little Azov Midbari, not the desert Azov, the Azov Romi, not the Roman Azov, but the Azov Shesha Shem Levi, or any other Azov that has a, I don't know the right way to say this, and the Shem Levi means a name that escorts it. Levaya, right? Not an escorting name. I don't know, I wouldn't call it a nickname, but it means it's a name that this one is specifically that type. It's that type of Azov. It's a desert Azov. It's a blue Azov. It's a whatever, right? It's that type. People refer to it in a specific way. So what? So Marorosa. Isn't it true that you have to use something called Maror? Whatever people say, oh, that's Maror. But if people call it Swamp Maror, well, then that's not Maror. That you can be Yotzei the Mitzvah with. Just like by Azov. Azov, we have to have Azov. People have to refer to it as Azov. If it's a specific type of Azov, that's not good. That's not valid. So it's the same thing here. So you have to use Maror. You can't use Maror de Agma. Amar Abaye. Kol Shenishtan. So that's Akasha, right? Because Rav Chisda said, in the name of Rimarshila, that Maror you can use. So how could it be? Amar Abaye. Kol Shenishtan. Shemoy Koydam Atan Torah. Anything which had a lot of different names before the Torah was given. So you have an object that you have this kind of Azov, that kind of Azov, this kind of Azov, that kind of Azov, and some people call some of them just Azov Stam. So if whatever before Torah was given had different names, Uvasa Torah Ikpid Alav, and the Torah says Azov, the Torah is particular about an Azov that doesn't have a nickname or an additional detail to its name. Biadua, so then it's known, you know, Shiesh Lashem Levi. So then you know that there are others. He's a terrorist trying to tell you, not those. Biadua, then you know, Shiesh Lashem Levi, that they have. What's the best way to say this? Then you know that there are, I guess, others. I don't know the best way to translate. It's missing like a little bit of a word in the phrase. That's the problem. Biyadua. Biyadua means it's known. Shayesh loy, that it has a Shem Levi, a nickname. What do you mean it has a nickname? The Torah says Azov. It doesn't have a nickname. That's the whole point. So you have to add a little bit of a phrase here. Biyadua. You should just know that there are those that are no good that have a Shem Levi. So you kind of got to add that into the line. Okay, but in any case, that's what the Gemara meant. Vahane. And these, lo nishtana shamayu kodem atan Torah, these meaning the maror, nowadays people call that swamp maror, you know, but before the Torah was given, it was all just maror. People nowadays wanted to differentiate more, but that's a modern thing. It's not a linguistic thing that the Torah is countering. V'hane, these marors, lo nishtana shamayu, they did not have a different name, kodem atan Torah, klal at all. So that's how Abaye explains this statement of Rav Chisda, in the name of Rav Bar Shila.
And
that Marah is different than an Ezo, because an Ezo is trying to exclude others, and the Marah here is not, because they didn't have other types of Marah before Matan Torah. How did he know that? I don't know, idea. But that was apparently what Ravina Bar Shila was saying. Rava Amar Rava says a different answer. Hane Marirta Stama Shamayu. Vaide Karle Marirta Da Agma Mishum Di Mishtakach Ba Agma. He says, so let's just translate it. Rava had a different answer. Hane, these Marirta, these types of Maror, like the swamp Maror, Stama Shamayu. People really call it Maror. They don't call it swamp Maror. Vaide Karle Marirta Da Agma. The fact that we're calling it swamp Maror. Mishon, the Mishtakach ba'agmo, it's not because that's what people call it. It's just because that's usually found in swampy areas. That's all. It's not really the name that people call it. Nobody calls it Marirta da'agmo. The Bryce is saying Mara that you find in a swamp, so it made its own name up for it. But nobody else calls it that. Okay, so you have to go figure out what people call it and what people don't call it. But in any case, that's so we're going to stop over there in the Gemara. And then next time the Gemara gets back to the idea of an Eged. And we'll have some details about what's considered to be an eged and the hyssop stuff. So we'll come back to that. Okay, we're going to learn halacha in about 2 minutes.